Welcome to the Superconscious Success Podcast, where Jen and her Superconscious Success Family co-hosts bring you valuable content each and every week on topics relating to manifestation, spirituality, and most of all, using your superconscious to manifest success in all areas of your life. Now on to today's episode.
Hey there, Superconscious Success fam. Welcome back to another chapter reading where we are going to continue on with the amazing book, Napoleon Hill's Grow Rich with Peace of Mind. Now, if you're wondering whether I'm going to read his most popular book, Think and Grow Rich, then that is on the agenda. But I do want to get some of the other books that I have found amazing out to you first. So keep reading or listening to the ones that I put out because they have some really great little nuggets in them that I think are going to help you with your own spiritual journey and your own transcendence and your ability to be able to manifest that which you desire. But this book is a fantastic one. If you have not yet listened to Eckhart Tolle's book, The New Earth or The Power of Now, then I also have those in this particular segment. I also have Buddhism for Mothers. I've got a few chapters left of that, but that's really great if you've got kids and you're wanting to learn how to consciously parent them. So there's lots out there for you. I have some incredible ones coming up now from Joe Dispenza and a whole host of others. So make sure that you continue to listen to this particular podcast. If you haven't yet headed across to Superconscious Success Podcast, there are some amazing interviews and some solo episodes there for you as well. Now, I do also have a couple of amazing programs coming up. Your Spiritual Shift is based on A Course in Miracles, and it's a way for you to be able to really connect with your spiritual side, start delving into the whole principle of non-dualistic spirituality, and also to help you to really transcend those higher dimensions. Then I've also got another one coming out called Peace and Prosperity. That one is an incredible program that I've got with another collaborator, and it actually teaches you how you can actually integrate peace into your life and then also put it in harmony with that of prosperity. It is going to be an incredible program with lots of amazing stuff wrapped into it. Both of those programs are going to be launching on the 1st of September, and I think you're really, really going to love them. So if you want to check out Your Spiritual Shift, go to yourspiritualshift.com. You can pre-enroll for that, which is amazing. And also, you can pre-enroll for the Peace and Prosperity program, which is found at peacenprosperity.com, and then you'll be able to also pre-register for that. So there we go, just a little bit of an introduction, but now we are actually going to be talking about the whole principle of to succeed in life, succeed in being yourself. That's the chapter that we're talking about today, and I think you're going to find it quite enlightening. So let's get on to it. Only the man who has found his true self can know himself, find his own best talents, and achieve his own high success. We need to live our own lives, and this attitude should be instilled in childhood. With being yourself comes self-control, a mighty source of strength in handling both circumstances and people. Beware lest in trying to pile dollar upon dollar you give up too much of yourself, for that man is truly rich who owns his own mind as well as his own fortune. Live your own life, I said in the first chapter. Now as planned, we return to the same great theme. I hope you are now completely receptive to the idea of being yourself and living your own life. By now you have seen how much this inward quality has to do with setting free your mightiest powers. Likewise, you have seen that in this book I've paid some attention, but not very much, to the nuts and bolts of earning a very good living. The reason is not that nuts and bolts are not important, they are very important. This book, however, is devoted to helping you find and use the basic drives that make a man. When you've read this book, when you've read and mastered this book, the nuts and bolts come readily to your hand and you possess the skills which transfer those nuts and bolts into a mighty edifice of good fortune. When the basic drives are not under your conscious control, the components of a rich, rewarding life lie scattered and you may spend the rest of your life searching for some missing part. We return now to the art of living your own life and being your own self, and shall look further into the ways in which this master skill strengthens and sustains you. One of these days you'll be in a clothing store. If some salesman tells you this is what everyone is wearing this season, don't be persuaded. Be yourself. Select colours, fabrics and styles which suit you. Tell the salesman that you prefer something that everyone is not wearing. Either walk out of that store without having made a purchase or buy with regard to your own tastes only. One of these days you'll be in a restaurant. Waiters often receive word from the proprietor or from the cook to push some item, perhaps because it brings a high profit. perhaps because there is too much of it at hand. If your waiter urges some item upon you, smile, shake your head, and order exactly what you would like to have from the menu. You may greatly admire some person for a particular skill or talent he shows. Wishing to exercise a similar skill, you may decide you are going to be that person. You will have wasted a great deal of time and effort before you discover that personality is a very subtle thing, and that nobody can be anyone else without harming his own personality and crippling the drives that can make him great in his own right. In my youth, I decided to write the way Arthur Brisbane wrote. He was a very versatile and capable writer with a huge following, and I thought I was being smart when I set out to copy his style. A friend brought me up short when he remarked that if I copied Brisbane, I would never develop a style of my own. Right then, I put Brisbane aside, and the success of my writings has justified my decision not to be Arthur Brisbane, but to be Napoleon Hill. Children try to imitate older people, which is understandable. I see many a grown-up child trying to keep up with the Joneses financially or trying to keep up the social pace that the Smiths set with disastrous results. Until you're willing to be your own self at your own level, you cannot know yourself nor know what your mind can accomplish. Let nobody bribe you away from being yourself. You are going to make money, and as you do, others are going to see you have what it takes. Fine, but this is the point at which many a man loses himself. Having built himself from within himself, and having thus attracted attention, he yields to a big opportunity to stop building his own wealth and peace of mind and ties himself to another's business. I've been told about a man who sits in a plush office in a huge company that supplies essential components in the field of aerospace. He does not work hard, earn a six-figure salary and bonuses besides. He can gratify almost any reasonable desire that can be gratified with money, but he cannot buy back himself. He allowed himself to be bribed away, so he sits gloomily behind his $500 desk and wishes he had not let the big company buy out the small growing company which once had been his own, and with it buy all the adventure and personal satisfaction he had known. Back in the days when $25,000 would buy what $75,000 buys today, and I was not earning half of the $25,000 a year, but I was absorbed in what I was doing. I worked hard and happily at publishing the Golden Rule magazine. Perhaps because I had been an advisor to Woodrow Wilson, I was approached by Ivy Lee, the public relations expert I had mentioned. He wanted me to join his staff and become a ghostwriter for one of his clients, the Rockefeller Interests. For a moment I was tempted. I listened to his terms. $25,000 a year on a five-year contract, and of course I was to knock Golden Rule magazine in the head. The moment passed and I was myself again. I replied, "Nothing doing, Mr. Lee." If the salary had been $1 million a year, my answer would have been the same. Later, of my own free will, I gave up my association with Golden Rule magazine. Did I then wish I'd accepted Ivy Lee's offer? Not at all. My name and my career remained my own. I retained and still retain the right to travel under my own name in any direction I wish to go, assuming full responsibility for my mistakes, taking full credit for my successes. People told me at the time that I had made a great mistake in turning down that handsome offer and even urged me to get in touch with Mr. Lee and see if the offer still was open. If indeed it had been a mistake, I told myself, I had only to remember that every misfortune carries with it the seed of a greater benefit. And when I look back at what I've accomplished by way of extending the secrets of happiness and life success over a large portion of the world, I see that only in being myself have I succeeded in being successful. Today, right now, start doing all you can towards being yourself. As you enter a clothing store or a restaurant or any other establishment in which you'll be served in exchange for your money, decide firmly and quietly that you are going to be yourself. If your talks with others in your own personal dealings, in whatever you may do that is shared with others or affects others, be yourself. I mention other people because it is most often in our relations with others that we neglect to be ourselves. And you can be completely yourself and appreciated for what you are while you still respect the rights of others. In the foreword, I list a number of blessings which are associated with peace of mind. I pointed out that peace of mind is the peaceful base upon which we erect a good deal of life dynamic. Now, somewhat overlapping the same list and somewhat extending it, I'm going to set down 43 items which pertain to being yourself. Few people will recognize themselves completely in this list, but if you'll take a pencil and check each item that you sincerely believe applies to you, it will be the most revealing. 1. The man who consistently is himself maintains his poise under all circumstances, whether the circumstances are favourable or unfavourable. 2. He has control of his emotions at all times. 3. He has perfect self-reliance and self-confidence in everything he undertakes. 4. He does not allow himself to be hurried into any careless action. 5. Increasingly, as he succeeds, he controls his own working hours and the conditions under which he works. 6. He never gripes or complains about anything or anyone. 7. He never slanders or condemns anyone. 8. He never talks about himself unless it is necessary and then never in a spirit of boasting. 9. He is open-minded on all subjects with all people. 10. He does not fear anything or anyone. 11. He moves about his affairs with quiet definiteness of purpose. 12. Before expressing an opinion, he makes sure he has the facts and he's not afraid to say, "I do not know." 13. He has no racial or religious prejudices. 14. He eats moderately and avoids every other form of excess. 15. Without pretending to be an expert on all subjects he thinks for himself. 16. He is a dependable citizen who cannot be influenced by any ism, which may be detrimental to his country or its economy. 17. He gives nobody any reason to be his enemy, but you cannot help it if someone dislikes you because of your success. 18. He is at peace with himself and with all mankind. 19. He cannot ever be poor or miserable, for, come what may, in his heart he remains happy and prosperous. 20. All the members of his family love him and thrill to the sound of his footsteps when he comes home. 21. He expresses his gratitude daily for all of his blessings and shares his blessings with all who have a right to claim a share. 22. He seeks no revenge for any wrongs or injustices done to him. 23. When he speaks of others, he makes every effort to avoid mentioning their faults, no matter how much their faults may have affected him. 24. He looks into the future by studying the past and recognizes that history has a way of repeating itself, that eternal truths do not change with the times. 25. He maintains a positive mental attitude. 26. He is slow to accuse and quick to forgive. 27. When others make honest mistakes, he makes allowances for them. 28. He will not profit in any transaction if it harms anyone else. 29. He keeps himself free from the bondage of debt. 30. Having acquired all the wealth he can use beneficially, he does not strain anymore, yet he knows with full assurance he can earn more if it should be advisable. 31. He converts all adversities and defeats into assets. 32. Facing defeat, he knows all defeat is temporary. 33. He has a major objective in life and keeps himself busy attaining it. 34. If he has been turned aside from his objective, he analyzes the experience and profits thereby. 35. His life is what he wishes it to be, and he always expected it to be exactly that. 36. As he successively pictures success within his mind and then attains it, he lets his deeds, not his words, display his success to others. 37. He is well liked by a great many different kinds of people, people of all races and creeds. 38. He is a living example of what a man may be in the United States of America when he takes possession of his own mind and is willing to live and let live. 39. He is no more disturbed by panics and business depressions than he is by matters which affect only himself. 40. He finds it easy to win the full and hearty cooperation of others. 41. He is fair to his adversaries, but he is practically unbeatable because he possesses a power unknown to most men. 42. He is fortified against disappointment because he knows that anything may happen with or without an obvious cause. And 43. He does his best at all times and never feels the need to apologize when circumstances turn against him. How many items did you check? If you have 3/4 of these virtues, you probably are aware that you are your own person, living your own life, knowing your own mind, being yourself without fear or self-consciousness. In reading through the list, you can see how wide a field it encompasses. Any one of those topics could be expanded into a considerable discourse, and many other constructive points of view are inherent in the ones mentioned. If now you will leaf back through the book and glance over the table of contents, you'll see how many other areas of mind conception and physical realization are related to this list. This is as it should be. We are speaking of a universal way of life. You can help others without interfering with their own possession of themselves. I have given a number of instances of how I have been aided by and how I have aided others. Please note that really effective aid comes not from bossing another person, but from helping that person find and use qualities or success which are waiting to be used. One cannot carry others along the highway of success, but one may point the way by helping others to help themselves. A child can be beaten into a course of conduct acceptable to his parents, sometimes, but that child has learned nothing. I well remember the thrashings my father gave me because I resisted sitting in church for endless hours, while 5 or 6 hard-shell Baptists did their best to make the congregation partake of the miseries of hell. One Sunday morning, my father followed me down to the river where I had organized my fishing equipment. He broke it up completely and gave me a whipping that would have brought the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals down upon him if he had whipped one of his horses that way. My wonderful stepmother heard my screams and came running to my aid. She pulled my father away from me and said, "If you ever strike this child again, I'll leave you forever. Can't you let him live his own life?" Much as I remember the beatings, I better remember the one sentence which settled into my young mind like a glorious light. My father never whipped me again, and I believe I gave him no reason to whip me. Yet I did live my own life, perhaps compromising here and there as a child must, yet always winning more and more freedom to be myself, because my mind conceived so firmly that to be myself was what I wanted. Let me add that my stepmother's influence at length made a fine person out of my father. A child also can be so mercilessly preached at, endlessly corrected and admonished for his own good, that soon no self-respecting remains. The child becomes an adult who forever will lean upon others. Never interfere with anyone else's possession of himself. Do not preach unless you are a professional preacher. Do not insistently and remorselessly teach unless you are a professional teacher. And even then, teaching should be limited to the teaching of definite skills and background knowledge. Do not expect any other person to meet your definition of perfect. Do not expect anything to appear perfect to you, and bear in mind that the imperfections give variety to the world. In saying this, I am reminded of a man who said that if there is a heaven, he did not wish to go to heaven when he died. Interested, I asked him to explain. "Well," he said, "I don't see any enjoyment in living where everything is perfect." I do not think it is an accident that the man is one of the best-known businessmen in America and that he owns a large measure of peace of mind. Also, I have never heard of his trying to reform anybody. He says, as I too wish to say, that it is perfectly possible to get along with people as they are, with their faults and with all their virtues. One good way to maintain possession of your own mind and to allow others to possess their own mind is to keep certain views to yourself. You are not required to go through life explaining yourself, and often it is a mistake to do so. This applies particularly to controversial subjects such as religion and politics. Exposing your views in these matters is almost bound to cause unnecessary conflict. No one knows how I stand on either religion or politics. No one, therefore, can get riled or rile themselves in regard to my standpoint. Many busybodies have tried to pry into my mind to see what they will discover in those areas. Once a woman wrote to me, How come I see no mention of Jesus in any of your writings? To which I replied, Madam, if you'll read any of my books in the spirit in which I wrote them, you'll find Jesus on every page. Between the lines, however, not in the words that are printed. Self-control gives you strength. To be yourself, practice self-control. Few people have difficulty in controlling their physical actions, but they may never stop to realize that physical actions begin in the mind. A man whose mind conceives only a small, frightened view of life will act just like a man whose mind conceives only a small, frightened view of life. A person who has self-control has strength. I repeat, strength, denied to many another. Above all, he has the strength to see situations clearly, judge them for what they really are, greatly increase the percentage of life situation he swings towards his own good and the good of others. Please look back at the list of 43 items earlier in this chapter. Number 22 says that a person who is his own master never seeks revenge on anyone. Let us take this as a very good example. Revenge can be spuriously sweet, but it is a sweet poison to the personality and no more will merge with peace of mind than oil will merge with water. Who is in a better position to revenge himself on a person who has hurt him but seeks an appointment of public office than the President of the United States? Very well, let us look at one of our presidents, first some 5 years before he attained that high office. When I mention he was then a lawyer in Springfield, Illinois, you will have no trouble in identifying Abraham Lincoln. One of our earliest big industrial companies was in legal difficulty, and Lincoln was appointed by the court to work with two other lawyers on the case. But these two lawyers were famous big city men. They snubbed the gawky country lawyer. When he painstakingly prepared papers on the case, they would not even read them. Worse yet, they would not even sit at the same table with him. This was a public humiliation, and it must have hurt bitterly. 5 years passed. The lean, sad-faced man was elected president. Soon it was time for him to choose his cabinet, including a Secretary of War. One man stood out as the best choice for this ominously important post, Edward M. Stanton. And Lincoln remembered Stanton as one of the lawyers who had treated him so badly in his Springfield days. Yet he appointed Stanton his Secretary of War. If there is any question that Lincoln was his own master for his own good, for the good of all, many men date their discovery of self-control from some one dramatic experience. I know that it is so in my case. I have mentioned that I learned peace of mind the hard way, by trial and error, and this experience is a good example. I had an office in an old building. One day the janitor and I had a misunderstanding. After that, the janitor decided to show his contempt of me. Many times when I stayed late at work, he switched off all the lights in the building and left me in the dark. I was then still capable of boiling with suppressed rage, and this I did increasingly. One Sunday, I entered my office to prepare an address I had to deliver the following evening. No sooner had I seated myself at my desk than the lights went out. I leaped up and ran recklessly to the basement. There I found the janitor stroking the furnace and whistling merrily. All my pent-up wrath burnt loose, and I damned him with adjectives that were hotter than the furnace. When I ran out of words, he straightened up, grinned and remarked, "Why, you're a little excited today, ain't you?" He had maintained his poise. I, a student of advanced psychology, an exponent of the philosophy of the Golden Rule, a student of the works of Shakespeare, Emerson, Socrates and the Bible, I stood there before a man who was scarcely literate and knew he was the better man. I went back slowly to my office. I sat and thought, and after a while I knew I must apologize to that man. No, I said, I could not and I would not. Yet in time I rose, knowing that I must find peace with him and peace in my own heart. When I got to the basement, the janitor had gone into his little apartment. I tapped gently at his door. He opened it and in a calm, kindly voice asked me what I wanted. I said I wished to apologize for the wrong I'd done him in cursing him. His simple smile spread all over his face. Nobody heard you outside these four walls, he said. I ain't going to tell about it, and I reckon you ain't going to tell about it, so let's forget the whole thing. We shook hands. There was no more friction between us and no more spite work. And something within my mind took hold of itself. I resolved that never again would I lose my self-control. Never again would I lose sight of the self which existed as a mind conception, and which henceforth never would falter. Once I had made that resolution, my pen began to take on greater power. My spoken words were received with full attention. I began to make friends with ease, and I was far better able to show others how to find themselves and be themselves and use self-knowledge to win a fortune. Did I make a perfect change? Not quite. I had been aware for some time of a series of bitter attacks against me which came from a certain journalist. For 4 or 5 years I ignored these attacks, but they became so outrageous that I decided to lay aside my policy of peace and hit back. I sat at my typewriter and I began to write. I wrote at length and filled pages with bitter invective. The more I wrote, the more angry I became. At length I wrote my last line, and then a strange feeling came over me. It was not a feeling of rage against the man who had tried to discredit me, but a feeling of sympathy and forgiveness. I never mailed that letter. What had happened? As I see it, my furiously tapping fingers had transferred my repressed emotions of hatred and resentment onto paper, and I was rid of those emotions. In a way, I had psychoanalyzed myself and had cleaned the dark sub-basement of my subconscious mind. The experience gave me two benefits. The first and greatest was the realization that any time rage took hold of me, I could write it out of my system. It is a great method and you might try it. Some get the same effect with a long, fast walk. Others indulge in violent athletic activity and then feel their self-control return. Others take out their bad temper on their wives, but of course this is harmful to both parties. My second benefit came from filing away some of my writings in anger and looking at them years later when I'd gained greater understanding. Try this too and you'll find it a very interesting process. For as you know yourself, you will increasingly know a better self. I am glad to say I have not needed any such release of rage for a good many years. Rage no longer can evade my guardian princes. Mind is your only master. You had nothing to do with your coming into this world. You may have little or nothing to do with your leaving it. But you have almost everything to do with your life while you possess that life. You can be the master of your fate, the captain of your soul, by the simple process of taking possession of your own mind and using it to guide your own life without meddling in the lives of others. Notice the connection between mastering yourself and not attempting to master others. A major reason for unhappiness is the tendency to meddle with the lives of others while we take too little time in trying to perfect our own. Nobody else can do the job of taking possession of your mind, nor should you permit anyone else to try. Your mind is your master, yet your mind can be such a kindly master that it responds to your needs and desires and finds ways to make them come true when they are definite. All other creatures on earth are bound throughout their lives by a fixed pattern of instinct from which they cannot escape. You are bound only by the pattern you set up in your own mind. You are limited by nothing else. Be patient in your search for peace of mind. If peace of mind were a quality which could be attained in one easy lesson, I'd be glad to show the way in a short letter rather than by writing a book. This book, which approaches the subjects of riches and peace of mind from so many angles, is built on a grand plan which may be compared to the farmer's plan in ploughing his fields, sowing his seeds, tending his crop, and waiting for his harvest. Remember the farmer and be confident and patient. And like the farmer, use thought and action in ways which have proved their power to bring a desired result. If you meet with adversity, see it as a valuable lesson. During the days of my youth, I used to flinch from adversity. Now when I see it coming my way, I say, "Hello, little fellow. I do not know what lesson you have come to teach me, but whatever it is, I shall learn it well, so you'll not have to return a second time." After I'd learned to live my own life, I observed that adversities became fewer and fewer, weaker and weaker, until at long last they ceased to appear. Living your own life may take some house cleaning. By the time we reach adulthood, most of us have acquired a good deal of clutter in our lives. As you begin to know yourself and know the image of the life you want to build, you'll recognize this clutter. Throw it out. You might begin by discarding some of those acquaintances who waste your time, interfere with your efforts, and try to manage you. Clear them out. You need not turn them into enemies, but when you want to be yourself, you'll find ways to avoid any person who tries to deny you the inalienable right of being yourself. There is also the self-made clutter, which results from not having a clear idea of how you wish to use each day. Make up a time budget. Allot your time in favor of the musts, which apply to anyone who wants to live his own life profitably and pleasantly. 8 hours a day is a good allotment for sleep and for rest. 8 hours a day is a good allotment for work at your business or profession. But as your pattern of life success grows stronger, probably your hours of work will grow less. The remaining 8 hours are particularly precious. You should divide them into various periods, each of which will be devoted to something you wish to do, not something you have to do. What do you wish to do? Stop now and think. Make a list such as plays, social life, reading, writing, playing a musical instrument, extending your knowledge in some field that has nothing to do with your making a living, tending your garden, building gadgets in your home workshop, hiking, boating, just sitting and watching the clouds or stars. I repeat, those remaining 8 hours are particularly precious. They are your free time in which you may live your own life precisely as you wish to live it. You may find this takes some courage. You may have acquired an exaggerated sense of duty towards others, often a pretty description for plain meddling. You may too well remember being told in childhood such nonsense as, "The devil finds work for idle hands." But then it takes courage to be oneself and avoid the pressures to be like other people and let them live your life for you. In the earlier stages of winning success, you may very logically give over some of that time to get a business education or in other ways to improve your earning status. But do not let a day go by without taking some time for yourself, some time you spend in pure pleasure as you see it. This is part of being yourself. It helps you always to keep in touch with yourself, so to speak. With increasing success, increase your hours of pure enjoyment. Do not allow those hours to be eaten away by business or by anything else. Some time ago, a close friend came to visit me. He found me dressed in my shorts, lying on the grass in the backyard and playing balls with my dogs. "What a picture," he exclaimed. "I guess you wouldn't want your public to see you as you are now." "I wouldn't mind it a bit," I replied. "I'd like people to know I practice what I preach. Here I am doing precisely what I wish to do at this moment. Can anyone be better off than in doing what he wishes to do? If any man needed simple freedom, my friend did. He spent a good deal more than 8 hours a day as the operating executive of a large financial house and often worked far into the night. With millions of dollars, he had no peace of mind and his health had begun to suffer. He telephoned me the next day. "Guess what I've been doing for the past hour?" "I can't imagine, but I'd certainly like to know. He laughed gaily. "Playing with my dog, and it's wonderful." A moment of silence, then he said, "Believe me, I'm going to play and live hereafter. I set down the key thoughts of this chapter many years ago. Woodrow Wilson read what I'd written and said, "It inspired thoughts which were not of this world." On another occasion, I received President Wilson just as I'd received my old friend, in my shorts while romping with my dogs. He was grateful. That harassed man shared, if only for a few minutes, the blessedness of having time to be one's relaxed self. When you see yourself as your own master and carry the vision into action, you use the supreme secret. So there we go. Wow. Succeed in being yourself. It just points out how important it is that we all be our true self, that we're all our authentic self, that we take time to really focus on what makes us happy, and for us to take responsibility for everything that happens in our life, that nobody else is responsible for how we feel or what we do. So this is a really important chapter. I hope that you got a lot out of it. If you want to get the summary notes, head across and sign up for the Inner Circle at Superconscious Success. And in there, you'll also find those 43 points that I mentioned in this particular chapter. If you want it all written down so that you can reread over it over and over again and try and start to develop yourself to add up to those 43 different points, then definitely head across and sign up for the Inner Circle and you'll find it there. So thanks so much for joining me today in this chapter. I look forward to seeing you in the next chapter. We're actually going to be talking about the benefits of the mastermind group. Okay, thanks so much, and I'll speak to you later. Bye.